This is the worst lunch I ever had.
Your only job is to cook. Do you not realize I have had diarrhea since Easter's?
Okay. Maybe I am not meant for these duties. Cooking duty. Dead guy duty. Maybe it's time for me to get a better duty.
Hello and welcome, my friends.
Okay.
Welcome. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 84.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series, of course. I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
Take it easy when you talk to me, okay?
And, Yeah. This, of course, is the show that drops bombs of awesome straight to your ear holes. Oh, my God. I'm just out of it. This is, this show is going up very late. I'm aware of all of these things, folks. I'm aware of everything that is going on that is wrong with this show.
No, Kelly Clarkson.
I'm aware of all of it. I may sound funny because I'm using a worse microphone than I normally use, and that's okay because sometimes things happen, and you got to get your life back on track. Much like this show, you may be wondering, if you visit us online at the noisebeam.com site, our old network, you may notice that site has been taken down. That is because the Noisebeam network is no more. And I just wanted to say a quick word for the good people over at Fisher Communications, Fisher Broadcasting. We had a great time. We had a great run with the Noisebeam Network. Unfortunately, things did not work out, and the whole network was canceled. But we made a lot of great friends over there. We got some new listeners from the other shows, like Stack of Dimes, Grapes of Rad, Sibling Rivalry, Unload with Madge and Dave, Planned Brotherhood, Double Plus Good Games. All wonderful shows, and we're still all going. Some exciting news on the Air Raid front. We got picked up by another network the same day we were let go by the Noisebeam network. So that's pretty good. And it's telling of this little show of ours is doing just fine. So also let's see. Boy, we just need to clean house right now. A lot of stuff has been happening. The network was shut down, got picked up by another network that I don't know if I'm even supposed to talk about it yet, because I don't know if it's gone public, but we'll wait on that one. Let's see, other things that have happened. We got a treasure trove of iTunes reviews to read for you quickly. Also, coming up a little bit later in the show, we have special guest Josh Lovesith. He is co-founder and editor, or maybe co-editor as well, of the Sound on the Sound blog, a very, very, very popular music blog here in the Seattle area. And I would urge all of you to go and check it out. And you know what? Once again, not ready, didn't have it queued up on the second computer, but here it is, right here. It took me 4 seconds. Look at that. Amazing. www.soundonthesound.com, a Seattle music blog. Really, really great stuff. Great writing. These guys are one of the websites that I go to on a normal basis to find out about new music and find out about what's going on in the Seattle music community. It's a great resource for the Air Raid podcast, and hopefully it will be a great resource for you as well. So go check it out, soundonthesound.com, and we'll have Josh Lovesith, very cool guy, on in a little bit. First, like I said, we need to clean house here. We are going to be doing some website revamping at our website, air-raid.net, now that is pretty much our primary site. again. So we're going to be doing some work on that. So if things are down, which they very well could be in the near future, please just go to the iTunes site, the Air Raid Podcast. Type in the Air Raid Podcast into the iTunes search bar. You should be able to find us there. And you can download the show there, or you can go to Stitcher, which is, if you don't know what Stitcher is, I mean, this is a great app for your smartphones. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, wonderful tool. It's like Pandora. You know what Pandora is. Everybody's used Pandora, right? It's like Pandora for podcasts, and it really, you know, it's very, very cool. And plus, they have a little thing called the What's Hot List. On Stitcher's homepage, which you can go to. And we have been lucky enough to be on that list many times, many, many times. And we were just featured in the Stitcher's weekly picks email, which went out to a bunch of people. So that was awesome as well. So thank you very much, Stitcher, for digging us, because we dig you. Yes. Yes. Okay. So I think I got most of that stuff out of the way. I went to my brother's 30th birthday last weekend. Happy birthday, Bradley Roden. Had a great time. We had to go up a little bit late. We missed out on dinner. That was okay. I was a little bit on edge. A little bit. I'm always a little bit. I gotta fix this in my life. I don't know what you guys are like at home. Those of you with wives and with what's the word I'm looking for? God damn it. Seriously. Why can't I think of this? It's such a stupid... Why? Take a breath. Take a breath. Breathe in. Breathe out. And you'll find it. You'll find your center. And I just did. The word I was looking for was in-laws. Many of you have in-laws out there. I don't know how you feel about your in-laws. I do fine. I do fine. I love my in-laws to death. But just like my own family, which they are now a part of, they annoy me from time to time. And yeah, you know, and that's something I have tried to work on and am still trying to work on. But that's kind of beside the point. Anyway, Mairead's parents came over. I was a little bit on edge. I was trying to get out of the house. We were trying to get Tatum down to sleep. And you know, Mairead's parents are here, so I'm trying to entertain them as well as getting stuff ready and things like that to go up to this casino, which is way north of Seattle. It took about like 45 minutes to drive up there. But anyway, we finally get out of the house, and we're running super, super late. We already missed out on dinner, which I felt bad about. My brother's 30th birthday. That's a big birthday, right? Yeah, it's big for most people. I'll tell you about my 30th birthday really quick. Had it all planned out. A bunch of friends were supposed to come up. Three friends showed up. Three effing friends. Isn't that sad? That says something about me, right? Not a great friend, apparently. Anyway, back to my brother. My brother's 30th birthday. Yeah, we had a good time. It was weird though, because we got up there, of course, you know, on a what was it? It was a Saturday night. Of course, on a Saturday night, a casino is just going to be packed with all sorts of people. And this is kind of, you know, this is north of Seattle and stuff. Man, I have never seen so much meth teeth in one defined area before. Never. I have never seen so much meth teeth. There was so much meth teeth in there. It was insane. Little, you know, missing teeth here and there, black teeth, you know, snaggle tooths. It was gross. It was disgusting. And by the way, I quit smoking. That could be a source of my newfound anger towards family members and things of that nature. But man, we get up there, and you know, I've not had a cigarette for like 2 weeks. Get up there every, you know, you're allowed to smoke in these casinos because they're on the Indian reservations here, and man, it's just, it permeates your skin and it gets into your clothes. It gets everywhere. It's in your pants. It's in your socks. It's in your eyeballs. My eyes were burning when I was in that place. It was disgusting. And you know what? I gotta say this. I smoked quite a bit when I was in Las Vegas. and it didn't feel like, I think that's how you acclimate yourself. If you're a smoker in one of those places, you don't notice it. You may notice it like on your clothes and stuff the next day, but you don't notice it when you're inhaling that stuff on purpose. It kind of, you know, it hides it. It hides it from the rest of your body. But man, I felt disgusting. I felt disgusting after I left there. Anyway, it was a great party. There were a bunch of people that showed up, but this place was so packed when we got there. Boy, I'm just getting off track all over the place, right? There were so many people when we got there. It was literally like attending Brad's 30th birthday was literally like attending a Where's Waldo convention, right? A Where's Waldo enthusiast convention, because it was so hard to find people throughout the night. It was kind of ridiculous. So we only saw, you know, my parents for like 10 minutes total, saw my brother for maybe, you know, 20, 25 minutes for the 3 hours that we were there. Mairead had the bright idea, because we both like playing blackjack. She had the bright idea. It was so packed in there. They only had two $5 minimum bet tables. And we're walking around, you know, we see a seat here, we see a seat there, you know. They had some $10 minimum bet tables. Same story, you know. We wanted to sit together, so that wasn't going to work for us. So we kept on walking around for a little bit. And then Mairead got the itch, you know. She needed to just lay down a bet. So we saw this like $25 minimum bet table, and Mairead was like, she got it into her head that, you know, if she only plays one hand, she's going to win that hand, right? This is her logic working right here. You can tell right away that both of us are just extremely good gamblers, right? So she gets it into her head that the first bet that she lays down on this $25 minimum bet table, she is going to win it. And we're going to walk away with double our money. And we're going to be able to bet some more, right, on the $5 tables when that opens up. She lays down. She sits down at this table. She breaks out $40. That's only one hand, people. The dealer looks at her, and he goes, ma'am, you know this is a $25 minimum bet, right? Mairead's like, yeah, of course. And so he kind of snickers to himself and deals, gives her some chips and deals the cards, and boom, dealer pulls 21 right off the bat. It was hilarious. I was laughing so hard at my wife. I think it, you know, it needed a good laugh right there. Don't you think? I think so too. Yeah. So there's my last weekend story. There you go. Excellent, right? Right. Let's get to the show, shall we? Let's get to this this talk we had I was going to read some of these iTunes reviews. Let's just read one. Let's read the first of this latest slew of reviews here. This is from a guy named Daniel Amons. He's a new listener. He's one that I met at the TBTL 1000th show. He was a Grapes of Rad listener as well. We were all hanging out together. Very, very nice man. And he says here, Vineyard Transplant gave us a good 5-star rating. Said, Roden called me out when we met in person for not listening to his show. That's right. I did. I called him out on it. I said, why aren't you listening? And he couldn't come up with a good answer, so now he's listening, apparently. So he goes on, proving him wrong would have been motivation enough, but it doesn't hurt that the show is great. Well, thank you very much, Daniel. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I hope you still enjoy the show, especially with me rambling on in this episode 84. So, okay, yeah, that's it. That's all I'm going to do. Also, really quick, going to be on the MacGuffin podcast as a guest. We're going to be talking movies, and I think we're going to be reviewing one of the Oscar picks coming up on Wednesday. So tune into that. Make sure you tune into that MacGuffin podcast, and I'll be sure to tell you guys how that goes if you don't listen. So anyway, we're going to be featuring music today by a band called The Pharmacy. Great, great local Seattle band. You guys are going to love it. Let's see here. This song is called Dig Your Grave by The Pharmacy. You can find The Pharmacy. Let's do that really quick, shall we? At thepharmacy.bandcamp.com. That's the only real website I could find for these guys. But excellent music. And they're going to be playing Sasquatch coming up here this summer. So make sure to check that out. It's going to be good stuff. You're going to like it. The Pharmacy, Dig Your Grave. We'll have Josh Lovesith of the Sound on the Sound Seattle Music Blog coming up here real soon. Stick around. It's going to be better than the last 15 minutes. I swear to God, it's going to be better. All right, that's it. I'm done. That's it. I'm done. I'm done. I'm leaving. Enjoy this. Enjoy this. Welcome back. That was The Pharmacy, Dig Your Grave, the new single that they just released yesterday. But when you hear this, it will be a week ago. So don't worry about it. But you can get that at the at their website. The only one that I could really find, thepharmacy.bandcamp.com. They also have a MySpace page. So check it out. Great band. Come see them live. They got some shows coming up. Oakland, California, February 10th. It will be at 1234 Go Records. February 13th, Karaoke Cafe in Denver, Colorado, and February 24th at Sneaky Pete's in Edinburgh, UK. So our listeners in London, go check that out. All right. Joining me in Dining Room Studios on this beautiful day, beautiful sunny day, we have Josh Lovesith. Am I saying that last name right?
You're saying it right.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah,
I didn't even have to practice.
No, that's great. That's actually quite rare.
Yeah, is it? Is it really?
It is rare.
Do people get it wrong?
I think people, for whatever reason, though, it's pretty phonetic. It's two syllables.
Right, right, yeah. I mean,
They always like kind of cock their head and like, Lovesith?
Right, right. You know? Like everybody's curious if they're getting it right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just super, super smart, so like... It just, you know, I can figure that stuff out really easily.
It shows.
Yeah, right, right. I wear glasses. Well, welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, Josh, you kind of run the back end of, and this is not sexual at all, you run the back end of a very popular website, music blog here in Seattle called Sound on the Sound.
I do, yeah.
Which has been going for, you told me, what, 5 years you guys have been doing it?
5.5 years.
5.5 years.
Yep.
And doing great stuff.
Thanks.
Great stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I find out, here's the thing. Like, I use like, maybe three different media outlets to find out about new bands. KEXP is one, of course. Let's see, The Stranger is another. Mm-hmm. And then your website.
Oh, thank you.
And so that's how I find out about new upcoming acts that I can possibly get on the show. Some of them don't return my emails. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, great job.
I think learning how to wrangle a band is an essential skill in the music industry.
It is infuriating sometimes.
Yes.
Man.
It is infuriating.
You guys probably infuriating. Yeah.
You got to stroke their egos a little bit.
Right.
You got
right.
to.
You guys are so good. Why don't you come on my show?
Meeting them in person is always a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they actually recognize that you're a real person and you're not a douche.
Yeah.
And then just being a music lover like they are probably.
Yeah.
I think is
yeah.
the other.
I think that helps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk to a little bit about, because you were a co-founder of this.
Yes.
Of this idea. How did this whole thing get started for you guys 5 years ago?
Yeah, so
five and a half years ago.
Abby and myself were living in this crusty duplex in mm-hmm. Fremont that now no longer exists.
Mm-hmm. It's been Fremont is a neighborhood here in Seattle.
Yeah, it's a really cool kind of funky neighborhood, nicknamed Center of the Universe, and they have, you know, naked hippie parades and things like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we were living in this kind of funky duplex with this other, you know, cat lady downstairs who had been living there probably 20 years.
But yeah.
This place now no longer exists because Seattle's kind of being taken over by kind of what's around this house. I see is these kind of like...
These townhomes.
Townhomes.
Yep, yep.
That are...
stale.
They're not particularly creative.
No, no. They're some, you know what? Some companies are doing a better job. Some builders are doing a better job with making them look, I don't know, more modern... Excuse me. And, you know, that they look a little bit better.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah.
So, I understand the want to, like, bring some density and things like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Gentrify.
I grew up in Seattle where everyone had a yard.
Right,
and
right.
And so that kind of mentality where yards are no longer existing is kind of scary to me.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you?
I am 31.
31?
Yep.
Same here?
Yep.
Yeah, and you grew up here in Seattle?
Yes, both myself and Abby grew up in Seattle.
We
met in high school.
Oh, cool.
She wrangled me into doing journalism class.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was a news editor, and she was a features editor, school newspaper, Garfield Messenger.
Oh.
And so, yeah, that's kind of...
Do you know a guy named Patrick Wicklund?
Oh, yeah, Pat Wicklund. Yeah, yeah.
He was my college roommate.
Oh, that's great. Well, then you know all about his political exploits,
I suppose. Yes, I do. Yeah.
We really admire Patrick for his, he doesn't care. He just goes for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that's funny. What a small world.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was my dorm roommate over at Central Washington University.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. We definitely went over to a few random house parties at his house
did
in
you?
West Seattle.
No shit. Yeah.
Yeah, so... yeah, so we know Pat.
That's funny. And there was this other guy, Spencer, that I can't remember his last name. But he had this shitty little mustache and two earrings in both ears. And he knew Pat. He went to Garfield, too, I think.
So he was probably part of the WBC, which would be the white boy crew.
Yeah,
did you hear
probably.
All about that?
Oh yeah, yeah, I heard all about that. Yeah. He showed me. I remember because like Pat would tell some tall tales. I don't know if he did this in high school, but he definitely did this in college. And he had this picture, this prom picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a mafia theme or mob theme,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in this picture with a bunch of his friends, and some were carrying like violin cases and stuff. And he told me that because I grew up over in small little rural town over on the Kitsap Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, meeting somebody from the big city
mm-hmm,
was,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd believe anything that they said.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, yeah, yeah, in these violin cases, like all these, like half of these guys were actually packing. You know, and I was like, I don't know if I believe that. And then he pulled out that in one of the violin cases, somebody actually had a Tommy gun. And then I definitely didn't believe that. But when Spencer came to college over there, he shot down pretty much every story that Pat had told me ever.
Mm-hmm.
It was all lies. It was all lies. So Pat, if you're listening right now, if you're listening to this, I know. I know all about it. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, Garfield certainly had its set of dangers being an inner city school.
Yeah. But especially the WBC.
Those guys were not dangerous. maybe to the girls that were walking the halls. But, yeah. 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 No. Yeah. No, they stationed themselves right outside the door to the girls' bathroom.
Really?
And there were about 10 of them. And yeah, they were just obnoxious.
That's great. But I had a great time with that guy over
yeah,
there.
No.
I'm not trying to dog on you here, Wicklund, but you didn't have to lie to make friends. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's get back to Sound on the Sound. So you guys, you and Abby, the other co-creator of Sound mm-hmm. on the Sound blog, mm-hmm. Took these journalism classes in high school, and you guys kind of got into it from there.
Well, that was kind of maybe a little bit of the seed
that
made us think that we could actually do it, I think.
Uh-huh,
I think that, you know, we went to college. She went to college in Santa Cruz,
uh-huh.
and I went to college here at UW, and... I mean,
majored in journalism or
no? No, I majored in informatics.
Okay,
and
I don't know what that is.
It's sort of a hybrid of psychology and computer science.
Really?
So it's kind of bringing the human perspective to technology, and
kind of like Terminator: Rise of the Machines kind of thing. What?
Well,
what
I think bringing intelligence to technology is. You know, bringing human intelligence to technology is kind of what it's about. It's not necessary, though I did take a AI class in college.
Wow.
A 400 level CS, class. I don't think that's what I was thinking about. I was just thinking about technology, making technology more easy to use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to create the destructors of the planet, really. I mean, it was more about, you know,
creating
the AI.
No, I think I get that Japan is all about the robots, and we can just leave that to them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah, totally. So you guys are living together in Fremont.
We were living together in this crusty duplex in
with
Fremont.
With a cat lady.
With this cat lady below us, and we...
Terrible.
It was just kind of a crappy house, and
yeah,
we were both just kind of bored, and we were drinking too much wine every night, and we decided, you know, it's time to, like, get out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we were already, like, huge music fans and going out to a lot of shows, so it kind of made sense to kind of channel our energy into that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so slowly, so, you know, really at the start for the first few years, it was really just kind of just going and seeing shows, practicing writing.
Like, uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't think that many people read us at first. And, well, I know nobody read us at first, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But we just kept doing what we wanted to do, and we kept meeting bands, and we kept, you know, it felt like people were appreciating what we were doing. So
yeah,
there were
yeah.
reasons to keep doing it.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. And then... You know, it seemed like after the whole Head and the Heart thing, we started to get a lot more attention.
Yeah. So were you guys the first ones to kind of write about the Head and the Heart then, or what?
Yeah. I mean, it seems that we were.
Uh-huh. Because I think I found out about the Head and the Heart from your website.
Mm-hmm.
I also found out about Pickwick from your website.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you guys make it a point then to go to, and when you started, did you make it a point to go and see bands that didn't have a big draw? Or did you like start off like, well, I'm going to go see Death Cab for Cutie and write about them?
No, I mean, I had already kind of done the Death Cab for Cutie thing by then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they weren't anything super special to me right at that moment.
Well, plus, I mean, there's so many... I guess what I'm getting at is, like, there's so many people writing about these bigger bands. Did you make it a point to go and write about, like, smaller bands that didn't really have...
Yeah, I think that was really the initial kind of...
behind it.
What was behind... We were seeing these bands that nobody was writing about.
Yeah, yeah.
Or nobody was... We were seeing these... And most of them were just, like, local bands who just played in bars. You know, we were going to mm-hmm. the Blue Moon a lot. We were going to Sunset a lot.
I love that place.
Yeah.
Love the Blue Moon.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Moon was kind of our house bar for the first couple of years. That's mm-hmm. where we mm-hmm. threw our first shows.
Oh, cool.
And that's where we, you know, met a lot of the bands that we were like, wow, you guys are awesome. And you sound awesome in the Blue Moon, which is probably the shittiest sound system in all of Seattle, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you can sound good in the Blue Moon, you can sound good anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a small place, and, you know, we're admittedly kind of misfits. Uh-huh. And so it worked out for us.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And so now 5 years later, you guys have been going strong. You've been bringing the attention of, you know, I don't know. You guys definitely, you've been to Dough Bay, and you've got some great video and mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. lot of great articles on the bands that have been there. Now, Dough Bay Festival has only been going on for what, a couple of years?
I think it's this year will be its fifth year.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
We've been to three, and there was one before that.
Yeah.
So.
And how does Dough Bay work? Because it's out in the San Juans, isn't it?
Dough Bay is out on Orcas Island.
Yeah.
Basically, you have to drive all the way around the island as far away from the ferry as you can get.
Yeah, yeah.
To get to Dough Bay.
Uh-huh.
And Orcas Island is already pretty much in the most northwest part of the U.S. on an island, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of the back end of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it's this beautiful kind of, like, kind of quintessential northwest, you know, Eden.
Yeah, yeah, if you totally, will. Totally.
And they have, like, a spa. They have a beautiful cafe. They have cabins are spread out but not too far apart, so it does feel a little bit like a community, but you're not too close.
Right, right.
And then once Dough Bay comes in and it brings 1,000 people onto the grounds, where I think normally there's maybe 200, it really changes the complexion of the place. But at the same time, I think there's this kind of, everyone knows, you know, you mm-hmm. kind of have to let some things go, be patient, and just, like, really enjoy the beautiful natural scenery of it all, too.
Right, right.
And, you know, for me personally, it's very much about, like, you don't, like, you have, like, these two screens in front of you, all this technology in front of you, and, like, you don't really need that to, like, make a real connection with people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, for us, you know, Dough Bay was this really concentrated way to make a lot of really amazing friendships and connections with people, with musicians,
totally,
that we wouldn't normally be able to make. And, you know, I really like drinking beer, and I really like, you know, going out to the sunset, but it's freaking loud in there. And
yeah.
Like trying to make, you know, trying to have, like, the only way you can have relationships is if you go out and smoke out front, basically.
Right, right. Yeah.
Build relationships. And so,
yeah,
that's really, it kind of takes it into another setting where it's much more relaxed.
Uh-huh.
No one is, like, rushed around, worried about when their set time is, or loading out, or, like, dealing with their drunk girlfriend or whatever. You know,
yeah.
It's just a pretty chill spot. Uh-huh.
It's been gaining a lot of
schedule.
Yeah. And it's been gaining in popularity. Do you see the Dough Bay Music Festival kind of drifting towards getting too big, or have they put some protections in place where they only sell a certain amount of tickets and they're only going to sell that much?
I think last year was a good number.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether they'll be putting, you know, I think it was 1,000 last year.
Right, right.
I don't know whether they'll be bringing that up.
It seems like they might want to, because, like, I don't know.
I think it's a somewhat difficult proposition because, you know, like, parking isn't a simple matter over there.
Yeah,
these guys need to get a field. I think it's, they don't have enough on-site, you know, space to really accommodate more than they already do. I mean, mm-hmm. they pack it in pretty good, and if they did it any more, it would be probably not as fun of an experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know.
Well, it seems like it would take that, you know, you're talking a lot about the intimacy of the whole festival, and it would take a lot away from it if they started, you know, really just packing people in there like
it would. And like, I think the beauty of, you know, Dobe is different to another festival is that, you know, it's not this place of fences and VIP areas.
Right.
There's definitely
right.
the artist house where the artists want to hang out, but I mean, it's a fluid, beautiful space where everyone can roam and like be together and just enjoy each other and not be distracted.
Right. Right.
And, you know, particularly with the fact, you know, there's a number of different stages around at different times of day. So you're not just sitting down in one spot. You know, they encourage, there's a busking station, so they encourage other type, you know, there's an open mic on the night before.
Oh, that's cool.
And so
they, so people who, you know, who aren't playing there necessarily or not on the roster, they can come and showcase their own
stuff.
There's
like, there's only, it's kind of a weird thing because there's like only one campfire, but it's like a big campfire and they have like, they light that up and people are, you know, singing into the night,
yeah.
you know, around the campfire and things like that. So it really encourages, I think, a kind of fluid, music-oriented environment.
Yeah. And you guys have got some great video of that, especially of the band Pickwick, which you guys, you know, a lot of the video that you guys have is of bands going out into the woods and playing these acoustic, acoustically playing these, you know, their songs.
Yeah.
And like you've got video of them of Pickwick playing on like a bluff.
Yeah,
overlooking the sound or the Strait of Juana Fuca, and it's just some beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah,
and you're in charge of the photography, right? And you do a lot of the photography. Do you do the video as well? Or
so we have a crack team. We have Tyler Kalberg.
Ooh, a crack team.
Yeah, yes. We have Tyler Kalberg who does all the video stuff. He does the editing and the shooting.
Okay,
it is one shot, and that was kind of just for, you know, simplicity's sake. We're out there in the woods. We're bringing, like, you know, the first year we had a generator that, you know, crapped out on us, and so we had to improvise and borrow a generator from Dobe, who was kind enough to do that for us, you know,
before
our first session even happened. Our generator, you know, shat the bed.
What were you using the generator for?
Well, for power,
to
because
power the instruments?
Our first year, we to power the sound setup, actually. And so our first year, Chris had a sound setup that was, you know, a small rack.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're carrying, you're wheeling it around. And it was, the first year was definitely a learning experience. we had way too much shit.
Right.
And
right.
so last year we had a much more, you know, he had a little Zoom portable 8-channel.
Right. Right.
We had like a little battery thing that we could just carry around, and it was like way better.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, way less problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's great.
But I think we really, our sound engineer, Chris Prof, is like, not trying to compromise anything for being out, you know, in the woods.
Yeah, yeah,
and
totally.
he can make anywhere sound, you know, sound like it's in the studio.
Yeah,
and so he's really incredible.
I was noticing that the sound on these video too, on these videos are excellent.
I think that's really what I mean. There are tons of one shot videos out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the sound, and there are tons of blogs. Doing videos for themselves because they recognize that video really is, you know, a really important piece. But, you know, having good sound, that's really what sets these apart,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, we're considering how we can, you know, so many people are emailing us about how can we get the Dobe sessions, you know,
right.
them. And so we're really considering how to do that.
Yeah.
And
Have you guys talked with any of the musicians that you have?
That's,
are they receptive?
That's
to,
what we'll need to do first,
yeah, yeah.
you know. And we've talked to some,
getting them to sign off on it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, to do something like that, we want to do it properly.
We really want. Yeah. Well, you want to do it legally too.
We want to do it legally, and especially now that some of these bands really are, you know, getting bigger. Bands like Sally Ford and Pickwick, who are you know, involved with real management and booking agencies and things like that. You know,
yeah,
they
yeah.
probably want contracts. And so that's just what we have to accept.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's go to our second musical break. We are, of course, featuring music by The Pharmacy. This song that we're going to hear next is called Coldest Morning Light. And you can find this once again at thepharmacy.bandcamp.com. I believe this next song, this is off their album Weekend, which came out in May of 2010. So, yeah, definitely check these guys out. They are fantastic. And we will be back with more of the Air Raid podcast coming up for you in a little bit with more of Josh Loveseth. Yeah. Joke. Yeah, bad joke. Bad joke. All right. This is The Pharmacy. We'll be back in just 1 minute. We are back. That was Coldest Morning Light by The Pharmacy, and we are still joined by Josh Loveseth of the Sound on the Sound blog on it's soundonthesound.com, right?
Soundonthesound.com.
Got it right. Yep. I do have it called up, but usually I don't. So I just didn't even look at my computer mm-hmm. because because usually I'm very unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
how this thing works. Well, welcome back to Dining Room Studios. And let's see, before we left for our musical break, we were kind of talking about the Doe Bay Music Festival
yeah.
and what you guys have done there in the past. You guys are obviously, you're going back this year, this summer, right?
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah.
And you're going to be at Sasquatch too, right?
I think we probably will. We were we were just talking about, you know, the lineup, and, you know, it's really, I think Adam Zaks does a good job of mm-hmm. having a good local bent to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Sound on the Sound is very locally oriented, and so I think we really appreciate that. And of course, you know, guys like Pickwick and Alan Stone's going to be playing.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Alan Stone might have to have words with that guy.
Yeah, I think I would do that. Yeah, he is a colorful character himself.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna try to go to, we're gonna be at Sasquatch this year, and they just released the lineup. Let's see, just a couple days ago.
Yeah,
and had a big to do about it. God, Beck's gonna be there, Jack mm-hmm. White, Tenacious D, Bon Iver,
mm-hmm.
lots of. Oh, the Shins.
Yeah,
man,
we were excited about Charles Bradley.
Charles Bradley.
If you didn't catch him at Bumbershoot.
I didn't, because I was out of town, and we had some friends that went there for us, and recorded some stuff,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, but I had heard Charles Bradley before, very very good stuff. Metric, Head in the Heart's gonna be there, and mm-hmm. Ward, man, just a huge lineup. It seems like the lineup gets like bigger and bigger every year.
I think Adam Zaks really has his ear to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen him out at, you know, shows out at the Tractor, like, scouting bands. And, like, you know, he's really doing a good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. There is one group on here that I just can't wrap my head around why people like it. Let's talk about this for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Childish Gambino.
Childish Gambino.
This is let's click Christopher Glover's let's see, hip hop alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Glover, of course, is on the show Community. He used to be a writer for 30 Rock. And this stuff, have you ever heard it?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about it? You're a music writer. You're into music.
I mean, I think you should probably stick to TV writing.
Yes.
I never thought he was that good of a stand-up comedian in the first place.
I mean, he's good like at the kind of the slapstick comedy. He's definitely a great comedy writer.
Yeah.
But man, I don't get what people see in this whole like whole hip hop thing that he's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think celebrity is something that's strangely in the internet era attainable for everybody in some way.
Right, right.
And if you have enough ambition to to make the right connections and people who feel like, oh, you have just enough star quality to like build on.
Right, right.
That, you can put yourself out there.
Yeah. But I think he's been doing this. I think what I had heard about him is that he's been doing this for much longer than I think he's like, he was doing this before he was on Community and before writing for 30 Rock, was my understanding.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, but it's just let's take a listen to this, really quick. If you haven't heard this, this is Childish Gambino, Christopher Glover. Let's listen to this for a second. It sounds more like a he's going the Kanye West route. I don't think I've ever heard this before. I know what your boy like, skinny tie and a cuff type. You walk around naked. Just text you, turn your phone over when it's all over. No settling down, my text go to your screen. You know better than that. I come around when you least expect me. Really? I'm sorry, but this is like a direct ripoff from Kanye West, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it's ripping off a number of different songs.
yeah. See, I've never heard this song before. What I had heard was more like straight kind of hip-hop style. This is more of like a, I don't know, what do you call this style of music? Is this still hip-hop? It's more like dance hop or something like that, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's just dance music, I guess.
Huh. All right, well, there you go. Childish Gambino. I don't like it. You shouldn't either.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like some nameless songwriters in a room probably wrote that song.
Oh yeah.
And he bought it for some money. And
you know what? I bet he wrote that song. I don't know. He probably had help on it or something. But I'm thinking he probably wrote
that
song.
But it sounds of that vein.
It does.
There's not a lot of like his personality in it.
Well, I don't think there's a lot of thought. Like every time I hear lyrics like that where it's like anytime somebody puts in a line there about texting somebody, I don't think there's a lot of thought that goes into it. Maybe I don't know, or they're trying too hard to make it like real life. I have no idea. But yeah, let's move on. Childish Gambino. He's going to be at Sasquatch along with a lot of other people. A lot of other people. So yeah, this is going to be my kind of first time at Sasquatch in the press vein. Mm-hmm. What do I have to expect? Have you guys done Sasquatch's Sound on the Sound? I'm sure you have. Yeah,
we have. Yeah, we are not a print publication,
right?
So we don't get the super special access.
Where you get paid
at the main stage, but there's like a little. There was last year. They've continually upgraded us every year. It seems.
Oh, that's cool.
They change the layout of the stages and whatnot. Yeah.
Move that mic a little closer to you there, buddy. Sorry about that.
And so this year there was we were in this like, last year was like the video game cabin or whatever.
Mm.
Or the year before that, I guess. But last year it was the press area and it was actual covered, you know, kind of patio overlooking one of the stages. And it was kind of like, whoa, we're actually...
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Being treated like something, which was actually good, because like doing that, Foster the People were on the smallest stage, which was probably a mistake. Considering how much they've blown up, and so that whole field in front was just like, you know, clogged and people climbing on people, and so it was actually pretty amazing to have that little safety in that little patio.
Right, right.
But I don't know. I don't really spend that much time backstage or trying to get backstage. You know, I'm taking photos, so I'm going to stages and taking pictures. But you know, there's not really much going on backstage.
No, not at all. But yeah, and being kind of above the crowd is probably definitely the place that I would want to be.
Yeah,
because when I get into those big groups, like, and this is. You know, it's cool that we're going to get to talk about this for a second, because I'm interested as to what you feel about it. Because first we were talking about Dobe, which is limited to, you know, 1,000 people coming. It's a very, like, community-oriented and very personable kind of festival.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're moving on to Sasquatch, which is just, like, balls-to-the-wall craziness. Mm-hmm. You know, people coming from all around the country to this giant festival, huge bands. So I'd like to get your take on that in just a second. But like, I get really like, I don't go to these festivals much anymore. I do now because we're doing, you know, the press thing and doing that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But which makes it a little bit better, I think. But like being down in one of these crowds, like trying to get, you know, because everybody's trying to get as close as they can to the stage, it seems like, at all times.
Yeah. And,
you know,
and it seems every year they push that barrier back a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty funny because you see these, I've been watching all these old, kind of live concert videos from these big festivals in the UK.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, the barrier is back, like, 30 yards.
Feet. Yeah.
And like, there's just this huge area where, and full of security guards in front of the stage. And like, Sasquatch, you know, hasn't had that. Like, they used to have the barrier like right up against the smallest stage.
Right, right.
And then once Mad Rad happened, I think they realized that couldn't happen anymore. And so they moved it.
So they moved it back. Yeah, totally.
And so it was pretty, you know, I think it makes it for a little bit of a safer experience, certainly.
But
there are some wild crowds sometimes.
Well, and this, I mean, Sasquatch keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, it seems like, every year. You know, it's like,
yeah, I think there's a limit to the space,
right?
So
right.
They have you know, I think it's like 25,000 people per day. But
maybe it's just people get crazier and crazier every year, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that they've done a really good job of being of the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that there's always a huge audience for that. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. So what's the difference to you between those two festivals that we just talked about, Dobe and Sasquatch? Like, It sounds like you definitely appreciate like the Dobe size festival a little bit more. It's more intimate.
I do. I mean, like that. I think that small, locally oriented festivals are the, you know, are kind of the next generation of these festivals. I think with the, you know, with the maturing of Coachella and Sasquatch and all these other, you know, massive regional festivals, it just really, with the blackout windows and things like that on either side. It's really, you know, you have Sasquatch in the beginning of the summer and then Bumbershoot at the end. And it's kind of like between those two, that really limits kind of the summer things that you can do with a festival in Seattle. And so kind of spreading it out a little more and giving, you know, musicians more opportunities to play in new places and to play in front of new crowds. You know, you don't need to have a massive festival to make it a really special time. And at the same time, the beauty of Sasquatch is that it brings, you know, it brings together a lot of artists that you just wouldn't see otherwise because it costs too much or they never come through your town or whatever. And so
that's a really good point. I never really thought about that.
I never thought about it that way
because it seems like every year it seems like there's a new festival to go to, and like the last year especially, like I really started noticing it because again, doing the show, trying to, you know, decide which ones you're going to cover and things like that, you know, can get really difficult because there's so many of them now. And it's like, and they're one after another. Seriously, like in the summer here in the Washington area, especially, I don't know what it's like everywhere else in the country, but I mean, yeah, it just seems like they're kind of stacked, like they're staggered like 1 week apart almost. For each of these little, these festivals.
I mean, I think that there is a festival season now.
Oh, definitely.
There is a circuit even, and, you know, getting on that is definitely every indie band's, you know, second year goal or whatever. It's like get on that festival circuit and see a bunch of new crowds and get paid decently for a summer and meet a bunch of other really cool bands. So yeah, I think it's, I think they are, it is an important thing. And I think, you know, that last point I made about just the bands themselves getting to make connections with other bands. I think that while you certainly can do that at Sasquatch, it's just a much smaller space and a much more relaxed environment, and nobody's, you know, Sasquatch is usually just one date on a tour, whereas Dobe, you really got to make an effort to go out there, and it's like a full weekend, and so you just might as well just like be chill about it. And so so I think that that's kind of, you know, I think it's just as important for the musician community to have those gatherings. And if, you know, if there are a lot of more small gatherings of musicians, that's just going to make the community stronger.
Well, and it seems like that's kind of the way things are going, especially here in Seattle too, with a lot of these bands. I mean, everybody kind of knows each other, you know, for the most part, you know, some, you know, it's not totally an inclusive thing.
I think,
but
that's how bands, you know, when you're a nobody band, you're just starting out and you haven't played any shows, like, the best way to move on up is to, you know, if you really believe in your stuff, is to make friends with other bands and get on their bills.
You can't,
you can only play your own bill at these places
so many times.
And you can only play, you know, for not very many people at the High Dive and at the Blue Moon so many times before you're just like disheartened. You got to make these connections to, like, you know, for your band and all the people in it. And so it's pretty important to have, you know, a community kind of angle to your band. You know, even if it's just your own community. I think, I don't, do you know Nick, who runs Seattle Rock Guy and Good to Die Records? He's really,
I don't think so.
He's really, you should get him on this show. He's a really cultivating his own community, his more hard rock community. And so he, you know, he started this record label and he's signing bands left and right and putting out, you know, seven inches and records and really believing in his people.
Yeah.
And doing something and raising their profile.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, over time, as we've made friends and we've done, you know, we've been able to do that for some bands that we really believe in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm going to have to look, him up because I don't think, I mean, I've heard that name before. It's the rock guy.
Is that what you said? Seattle rock guy.
Seattle rock guy.
And his new record label that he's kind of been doing, you know, really doing, sponsoring a show every week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got 4 or 5 bands now on it. And, you know, he's been putting out their records. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty, he's really invested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Let's see, I was gonna ask you something, but I found it. It was locked back in the brainstem. So do you ever get, cause you take a lot of photographs for the website, like I said.
Yeah.
And so you're probably tasked with, especially at like a festival like Sasquatch, you're probably tasked with like going down into the crowd and getting shots from like the crowd view. Do you ever get really like claustrophobic down there in some of these crowds,
you know,
that you're taking pictures
when
at?
When I first started doing stuff, I really did.
Uh-huh. Now you're just kind of used to it.
It doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah.
And the truth is that some of the best stuff is capturing, you know, some of my favorite stuff is when you're capturing that electric moment between performer and the crowd, and it's just like everyone's in ecstasy, and it's just
right
really, when you're capturing that connection. And so to be in the crowd and to be a part of it and to like have, you know, to have a sweaty, gross, bleeding Ami from Monotonics like laying on top of you.
Yeah.
When you just randomly decided to go out into the crowd and like stand somewhere, and like he got his camera, you know, like I don't know if he decided he wanted me to take that picture, but it was just really, things happen when you go in the crowd.
And
so you can't be afraid.
Well, those are definitely some of my favorite shots, whether it be like from the stage taking a picture of like, you know, somebody leaning down and like shoving the microphone into somebody's face, you know, at a smaller venue.
Yeah.
Like those are some of my favorite all time shots.
For sure.
Or like, you know, the lead singer like jumping off into the crowd and people catching him as he falls in.
For sure.
Yeah, it's just, those are the best. Those are the best. Well, let's switch gears really quick, because I did want to, before we run out of time here, I wanted to talk to you about how you kind of cultivated this love for music. Because we talk about this a lot on this show. We get bands that come in, and it's always really interesting to me. I don't know if anybody else finds this interesting. Any of our listeners do. But I haven't gotten any emails that say otherwise, so we're just going to go ahead and do it. Finding out how this all started for you and like your love for music. And during the break, you said that you do play guitar. You played in the band.
I do. I mean, I just play guitar on my back porch just when I come home from a day of work, and I'm just like, you know, I just need some time for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, music has been as part of my family life as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were, you know, like John Hyatt and Bonnie Raitt and, you know, kind of a more blues country kind of angle.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of the music that I grew up on. But I also, you know, my first instrument was saxophone, and so I was deeply into jazz for a few years.
Yeah. Were you pushed into it, or did you just pick it up?
I wanted to do saxophone because I wanted to be different, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just wanted to.
You didn't want to be like every other Seattle jackoff that was playing a guitar.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you, I mean, this was only when I was, you know, in fourth grade.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah.
This is, you know, when you're in fourth grade and you're choosing an instrument, like that's a big decision.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You want it to, you know, say something about you. It's like, you know, it's a big decision for you. Bigger, probably the biggest decision you've made.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're only 10 years old or whatever, and so. But no, I mean, I was very much into jazz, and I really liked it. I just, you know, I didn't keep going with it because I didn't find anyone to play with, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, motivated in other ways. And so, you know, I definitely wanted to get a job, but I found I was very extracurricular. And so I had lots of other things. I played Ultimate Frisbee and did, you know, journalism class and things like that. Yeah, so, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I, you know, after jazz, I was working in a restaurant, and well, I mean, there was the whole early 90s where I listened to gangster rap. And
yeah, like, yeah.
You know, I think music...
everybody had an NWA fetish.
Oh my God.
Like every white kid, once Menace to Society came out, like every white preteen or teenager, I can't remember, when did that movie come out? It was early 90s, right?
Yeah, it must have been 1991 or 92.
Maybe. Yeah,
yeah.
Like we all had the whole NWA fetish after that.
And you know, I went to school in the inner city, and so I definitely you know, kind of that exposure.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I listened to, you know, rap for the longest time, and then, you know, I was listening to mainstream country when I was working in the restaurant for a while, because mm-hmm. that's what everyone in the restaurant listened to. And yeah, so I couldn't escape it. So I was like, well, might as well find somebody in here that I like. So I'll admit, I'm into Kenny Chesney.
You know, there you go, man.
I think my tractor's sexy.
Hey, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Everybody's got their little secret things. Like, I've been really into Michael McDonald lately.
Yeah.
And very into, I'll put this disclaimer on it. I've been getting back into, The Fine Young Cannibals.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. My dad was very into Fine Young Cannibals. And
yeah, I love their music.
I was younger, they somehow, or maybe I snuck it, I watched a lot of MTV.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So that definitely, you know, it definitely shaped my perspective. Yeah. And, you know, I've always had a friend, like a really good best friend, who's been very into, you know, I had a best friend who was in the whole Nirvana thing.
Oh, yeah.
I had another best friend who was just hugely into his own band and, you know, kind of getting that angle. And so I feel like it's always been just going, you know, from one angle or another.
Right. So you've had a wide array of music that you've always kind of been into. Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, because I feel like 13-year-old me would be super pissed off at 31-year-old me for admitting that I like Fine Young Cannibals and Michael McDonald. And even a little bit of R. Kelly, you know?
Yeah.
Ignition is a fantastic song. Because, you know, when I was, 13 years old and Nirvana was huge, like, you know, it was Nirvana and my favorite band was Sonic Youth. Mm-hmm. And I loved Bikini Kill and mm-hmm. Gas Huffer. You know, mm-hmm. I would go see Gas Huffer when they would play in Bremerton all the time. Mm-hmm. And, I feel like 13-year-old me would just be, like, vomiting with anger right now.
Well, I mean, that's when I look back. I mean, it's the same thing. A 13-year-old me was pure attitude.
Oh, yeah. You
know? We thought we knew everything. And, you know, I look back and, like, I'm having these, like, old man moments now that I'm in my 30s where I look at these kids and I'm like, how young are you? And, like, these kids were, like, swagging around like they know everything.
I know.
It's just like, God, I must have been like that when I was a kid.
I think we all were, man.
Yeah.
I think we all were.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I always look back with, like, disdain and a lot of embarrassment.
A lot of embarrassment.
Just, like, you remember these certain instances in your childhood where you're like,
well, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Michael McDonald. the latest Mayor Hawthorne record takes a lot from Michael McDonald. Uh-huh. If you haven't heard it yet,
I don't think I have. No,
you should listen to it, especially if you're into it right now. Like, you're gonna be like, he straight up ripped Michael McDonald. And like I love Mayor Hawthorne.
Yeah, yeah.
But man,
so he's doing some yacht rock, huh?
He's doing a bit of yacht rock. It's yacht soul, I guess.
It's yacht soul. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's really, it's funny. I'm like, wow, is this? Yeah.
But does he do it well? Is it?
He does it well.
You're saying you're a fan.
I've been considering looking into this Michael McDonald guy a little further. And
thinking, you got to, man. Yeah. It's so good. I think he used to be like the lead singer for Doobie Brothers, I want to say. Don't hold me to that. I don't know. I don't know for sure. Anyway. Well, hey, Josh, it has been a fantastic It's been fantastic having you on the show.
It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. And hopefully sometime in the future we can get you back on and awesome. Maybe have Abby join us as well.
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to meet up at Sasquatch too. And
I think that would be great. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you can show me around, because most of the festivals that I've been to so far in like the press aspect have mm-hmm. been like Comic-Con. And mm-hmm. and smaller, you know, music shows and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. and comedy shows. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna have to show me the ropes at this big doings.
That'd be great.
Over
yeah.
there. Okay. We're gonna go out today with, oh, you know what? Plug your wares. I totally forgot about that.
Oh yeah. I write a music blog called Sound on the Sound. www.soundonthesound.com.
There we go. And, there we go.
Yeah.
Do you have your own website for like the photographs that you take in? And,
you know,
and
not really. Like we're actually, no? we're sort of re, we're giving the Sound on the Sound a new look here and
right,
kind of
right.
going to, you know, feature a lot of that stuff a lot more now that we're doing videos and we've been doing photos for so many years that we're going to kind of, you know, have some dedicated pages for those and really
excellent.
Trying to make it really look nice. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I am not lying when I tell you guys that you need to go and visit soundonthesound.com, watch some of these videos, especially of like bands like Pickwick and Brian John Appleby, two bands that we've been pushing a lot on this show as well, and who we've talked to. Very, very good stuff. And so you guys are revamping the website. When mm-hmm. can we expect to see that?
I expect that'll be done in spring sometime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're getting there.
Excellent. So you guys are actively working on that right now.
Yeah. I'm going to go home and work on it right now. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you for taking the time to come and meet with me and have this little chat.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it. We're going to go out today. Let's see. With The Pharmacy, more of The Pharmacy. This song is called It's Over. This is the apt song of the episode. And yeah, you can find us, www.air-raid.net. Also on the Noisebeam Network at noisebeam.com, where we have a bunch of great shows for you, brought to you by the good people at Fisher Communications there in downtown Seattle. Also, go to iTunes. Leave us a little review and a star rating. That'd be great. Helps us continue to get great guests like Josh Loveseth on the show. Did I say that right?
You did.
I think I've messed it up, though.
No, you got it right.
Okay, good, good. Look at that. Look at that. Fucking pro over here sitting at the end of the table. Yeah, go to iTunes. Leave us a star rating or a review. It only takes a few seconds of your time. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Air Raid Net. All right, everybody. This is It's Over by The Pharmacy. And we will be back next week. Have a good one.